Hello, everybody, and thank you for tuning in to the Liberty Report. With me today is Daniel McAdams. Daniel, good to see you.
Good morning, Dr. Paul.
Good. Another tragic event yesterday. Can't be anything good. Bunch of people getting killed over in Manchester in England. And innocent kids getting killed at a musical conference and, you know, concert. It's just, it's just such a mess. It sounds like, you know, the whole world's blowing up. If you put it into perspective, it isn't quite as bad. But for the people who suffer through this, it's bad. And, of course, the big question is why does this happen? The first word out was a lone person doing this. When one person goes nuts and does this, and it may turn out to be. But then right away we hear, oh, no, ISIS wants to get the credit. Mm-hmm. As if what's happened to the world, you want credit for this kind of stuff. And the truth is, I don't think anybody knows yet, but they'll sort it out. But no matter how you look at it, it's very tragic. But it is one event that goes on. We've had several, not nearly this bad, you know, in this country, but they're happening around the world. But there are other big events, too, when thousands, hundreds of thousands, maybe even a million people killed in skirmishes and wars and things going on in the Middle East. Just look at the countries like Afghanistan and Iraq. I mean, it's a horrible mess. So this I think is part of it. But the big question is what should our immediate reaction be to this, and how do we put this in the proper perspective?
Yeah, I think it's, you know, as we discuss, it's part of the larger context, isn't it? I mean, it's part of the larger war of the U.S. and U.K. intervention in the Middle East. We saw very poignantly over the weekend, and we discussed it yesterday, President Trump's view that Saudi Arabia is our ally in the region, and Iran is the enemy, and Syria is the enemy, and by our allied relations, Russia is the enemy. So sort of a war on all those. I think that's a larger context. Do you think, or?
Well, I do, and I think that's the big one, and we talked about it yesterday, that, the aggressive nature against Iran is serious and dangerous, because that means they're against Assad in Syria. And they mention, you know, this is necessary because they're bad people. But Trump didn't mention in his speech that, you know, you're taking on Russia, too. Yeah. So Russia is in this mix, and it's all part of that. But it does originate, I think, 15, 20 years ago. There's always been violence in the various religions, but I think the most recent violence, the first time I started paying attention to it was, you know, when the Soviets were in Afghanistan. Mm. So we aligned ourselves with the radicals and actually promoted it. Our CIA got involved, and that was when we were helping the Taliban. It morphed into being the Taliban, but the radicalism continued, because all of a sudden we were the occupiers. We no longer could say we're doing the Lord's work. We're helping people defend their homeland from the Soviet invaders. But now all of a sudden, from the perspective of the radicals, we are the occupiers and we are the invaders. And in a way, we have lost the moral high ground, especially in the last 15 or 20 years.
And think of this, people are making fun of it too, this crazy picture of Trump with his hands on this weird glowing bulb along with the Saudi king and I think al-Sisi of Egypt. They're opening a center to fight religious extremism in Saudi Arabia. And of course, at least some people commented on the absurdity of this. But let's take the word for it, people who are saying that ISIS has claimed responsibility. Here's Trump right in the middle of Saudi Arabia promising a fight against extremism. But what is ISIS? ISIS is an offshoot of al-Qaeda. They had ideological differences and split. But what was al-Qaeda? It's an offshoot of the Wahhabist Islamic strain that had its birth in Saudi Arabia, is nurtured in Saudi Arabia, continues to be nurtured in Saudi Arabia. There's no Iran stamp on here, no matter what the neocons on the radio want to
and
say.
And we've encouraged it.
Yeah.
You know, when we financed it, our CIA was involved. And even in spite of the rhetoric, we're still, subtly, if not openly at times, on the side of ISIS, in the sense that if we can recruit these bad guys. That was the original reason why we were sympathetic to Bin Laden, because he was fighting the Soviets.
They're the toughest fighters, too.
Yeah, and but that is still the case. So right now, ISIS is, an enemy of Assad. But we're in there. We're in the enemy of Assad.
Yeah.
And so, therefore, the ducks are lining up. And that's what I think is the real danger, the East versus the West. The peace dividend, the fact that it didn't come was very disappointing to not only me, but to many people around the world. And things did improve, but all of a sudden things shift. People who lined up against us sort of had their back up against the wall, and they changed their attitude. Not that they were righteous and right on everything, but I think this is what happened, because I think Putin comes along and said, hey, look at this. We're getting pushed around. We have some pride, and we're being surrounded, and we've showed the maps where our bases are. And even currently right now, there's a major move on in the House of Representatives in the subcommittee to get the funding to build permanent bases in Eastern Europe, in Ukraine and Poland and these different places like this. And it's just in their face. So you could see why Putin might be sort of a defender of the Russian tradition. And of course, he does have, a lot of support. But it seems like all these things is to do whatever we can to line it up and put all the blame on Russia. For instance, this whole thing about Russiagate, they're interfering. That's way blown out of the proportion. Nobody's proven anything. But who would most likely to push that? The Democrats.
Yeah.
Hillary said that was all the Russians' fault. They've been involved in this election and this stuff. But both sides seem to want to build and keep this going for nefarious reasons. And I think it has to do with finances and natural resources. It has to do with the military and industrial complex. And on and on. There's a lot of reasons that we have to have an excuse. And communism was the excuse we used for many, many years for us reaching out and doing what we had to do. And they did pose a threat. Now they've had to create a new enemy, and they're working on it very hard. And it seems like they get tremendous support from all the media.
Oh, yeah.
Whether it's conservative or liberal media, they're all chomping at the bit, to come down hard on this need. And what Trump started off here is, it's happened before, is that Iran is synonymous with evil. And you
terrorism,
hear it all the time.
Yeah.
they're radical Islamists, and they're the most radical Islamic state in the world. And they are even getting accused of being, an accomplice with ISIS.
Which is absurd.
Yeah.
So. The funniest thing on what you said earlier about the Hillary and the Democrats being behind this Russiagate thing, the funniest thing, it's funny and it's also tragic, there was a picture of a fellow at a protest, obviously a Hillary guy, an anti-Trump, a Russiagate guy. He had one of those crazy pink hats on that identify you in that group. He was carrying a sign that said, "Where's Joe McCarthy when we need him?" But about the Russiagate, this is interesting. The whole sort of idea that this Democratic staffer Seth Rich was murdered because he was a DNC staffer. The idea that he was murdered because he was sending WikiLeaks some of these hacked emails, that's a crazy conspiracy theory. But the idea, this totally unproven assertion, that Trump and Putin actively collaborated, not just in the election cycle, but for years. If you look at the UK dossier that this spook put together, for years they were colluding and planning for when he was going to be in the Oval Office and he would be their Manchurian candidate. That somehow is accepted as conventional wisdom without any facts at all. That's not a conspiracy theory.
Well, they were probably talking about how they each could make more money.
Yeah,
is no probably kidding. What they were doing, but that hasn't prevailed. It's turned into a political fight rather than just competition in economic politics.
But we wanted to talk about the Montenegro thing as sort of another front in this war that we're sort of trying to broadly look at,
And what bothers me on that is is the NATO people, people who are speaking for NATO, are bragging about this. Oh, yeah. This is wonderful. We won the fight. We got Montenegro, this crucial country in the world. You know, not even a million people, I don't believe.
600,000.
600,000 people. They went, they came with us. They came with the West. Just sort of like the Ukraine, you know, totally endorsed going with Europe, and they won a total rejection of Russia, which was all, you know, malarkey too. So they, this is what they're doing. They're bragging about it. But, you know, one thing I've just sort of learned recently is there's some similarities to Montenegro with Ukraine, because there are a lot of Russian sympathizers in Montenegro. And right now, the economy has turned down.
Yeah.
You know, they don't have the tourists coming in. And there was some other trade that they had, and it's been cut off. So it's really hurting the people. You know, why can't the people, well, maybe the majority of the people in Montenegro would say, yeah, we'd like to be an independent state, stay on our lives. But it seems like they're forced into these conditions. Are you going to go with NATO or with Russia? And now they're bragging about it. Just more of this division, divisiveness, to show that we do have an enemy out there, and we can't let Russia take over, you know, the Balkans and take over Europe. And that's why we have to send more troops and build more bases and spend more money. And that's why the current administration wants another $1 trillion. And the people who build the bombs are making a fortune. And then we can be bosom buddies with this wonderful state of Saudi Arabia. You know, it's just unbelievable.
But Montenegro is a perfect example of how this works. You know, for all of the feigned horror in the U.S. of anyone manipulating our elections, the U.S. has been buying and paying for Montenegrin leaders since 1998 when Milo Djukanovic was elected. I was actually there on the ground as an election observer at that election. The U.S. was solidly behind Djukanovic. It was one of the most crooked elections I had ever seen. But they backed him to the hilt for almost 20 years. They paid his way. He was one of the most corrupt people in Europe. But so they buy off the leaders, they support the leaders, they support their political parties. But the people in Montenegro are not in favor of NATO. They wouldn't have a referendum on it because they were afraid it would fail. Most people remember that it was NATO that actually bombed them back in 1999. And you're right, the Russians tended to have vacations in Montenegro. They use the same Cyrillic alphabet, which makes it probably easier to travel and enjoy the beautiful coastline there. So you know, that's how you do it. You corrupt the officials, which was what we've done.
Well, you know, we've been pretty close with Saudi Arabia for a long time, but I think after this recent weekend, we're closer than ever, which means that our already support for the Saudi war against Yemen, that will continue. We will be definitely on the side of Saudis. The Saudis control of the region over the Persians, and it'll be an Iraq-Persian deal. It's going to be a Sunni versus Shia war. And then, of course, it goes into be politically expansive when we start talking about Russia. But, you know, the thing that's now that they're talking about is what will Trump do when the pressure comes, and it's already started. I understand they've been having this discussion and pressure that they want that the Saudis want to rescind that law that's allowing 800 families that had family members killed on 9/11 that they will can sue the government, which is sort of like a blatant, open statement that they were involved. Of course, most people now are believing that they very much were involved. You know, there was special treatment from the very beginning. So now they're saying, get rid of that law. But, you know, Trump can't get rid of the law. Maybe he can put a monkey wrench in it or something. But somebody might say, hey, Ron, he can't do that. I remember him saying, you know, this is good. Yeah. We'll stick it to him. But, of course, I think he's changed his mind a little bit, you know, on Saudi Arabia as well, like we pointed out yesterday.
Maybe having his thing on that weird ball, you know, infected his brain.
Yeah.
But, you know, coming back to the attack, which is where we started of yesterday, which is horrible. You know, Brendan O'Neill, who writes for Spiked Online, makes a good point, which I would even develop further. He points out that after events like this, the political leaders and the media, they rush to put forth the idea that we must have togetherness. He calls it hollow togetherness, hashtags, love defeats anger and everything. And he points out that the fear in the media class and officialdom that the masses may turn hateful after an attack. And they want to thwart that. But I suggest that the masses, they're afraid the masses will turn hateful at the attackers, which they probably should be angry, but even especially at their own governments whose policies encourage such attacks.
Well, this is exactly right, and this sort of came up on occasion when I was in the presidential race. Policy, policy, policy. What do they do, and are they reacting? Have they reacted to something that we have done? And I think this is important. You have these tragedies. You should have comfort and concern and take care of the people who suffer from this. But if you don't talk about policy, maybe this aggressive multiculturalism and the wars that have been created there and bringing new people into countries that have different cultures, maybe that has an effect. This is not systematic, voluntary migration that's going on. It's a lot more aggressive than many libertarians even want, because I think there should be some controls on people coming in when they're sent by governments and picked up by the government, and the innocent people have to pay for them and take care of them and all this. It has nothing to do with a natural migration and immigration position, which would occur, in a much freer, much more libertarian society, because you would not be cutting all this off. But that may well contribute to, problems like this. And if that is the case, since they're dealing with, this softer approach and comforting the kids, which is important, if policy doesn't change, I've always said this is going to continue. Matter of fact, I talked about this occurring, before it occurred, back in the 90s. This leads people to frustration and anger, and they will strike out. And even if they're not powerful, they're more likely to use terrorism. That's always been the tradition. You can't wait around until you have an army that can confront your army that dominates, a whole country. But the people who really, really get angry at occupations and things, they will use terrorism. That's the only way they can, make up for their weakness militarily. But if you deal with this without policy, I don't see it ending. I think it'll get worse, and that's rather sad. I unfortunately don't think it's going to end until our country goes bankrupt. But it sure is a mess.
Here's why I think UK citizens should be angry with their government as well as the terrorists. The UK has been an enthusiastic supporter of U.S. wars in the Middle East. They've been an enthusiastic supporter of the regime change in Syria. UK citizens have gone over to Syria to fight jihad, and the UK has turned a blind eye to that. But now that ISIS is being routed, these UK jihadists are coming home. And there are going to be waves of people like this that come back home. And this is all done with the complicity of the British government. They should be angry, and we should be angry with our government. But they don't want that.
Yeah, but what are they accused of if they challenge it, saying something similar to what we're talking about? Well, you're a racist. You're a racist, and you hate people, and you don't want free travel, and you want closed societies, and you hate all Muslims, and that sort of thing just goes on. So that's really a significant problem. It's a far cry from what it would be like in a society and in a world where people would be permitted self-determination, and that voluntary exchanges would be legal, and people wouldn't interfere in the internal affairs of other nations. If we accepted just that principle, how many bases would we have overseas? And when we look at the picture of how many bases we have, and we're talking about building more to confront Russia. I mean, there was a time when, I wasn't opposed to getting the Soviet missiles out of Cuba.
Yeah.
But this is not Soviet missiles in Cuba. This is quite a bit different. This is lining up the ducks and taking advantage of wars that have been going on, the Sunni-Shia war and the Arab-Persian war, and now it's a confrontation with NATO West, who has pushed things way too far, and they've been able to do this, you know, because we have been very powerful. We say NATO, but we're NATO, because NATO doesn't exist without our money and our weapons. I mean, even Saudi Arabia doesn't exist unless we make deals with them and give them $300 billion. We don't give it to them. Allow them to get $300 billion worth of weaponry, which really enhances the profits of our military-industrial complex. So it's a big deal.
Well, my final food for thought I'll throw out there is just before the U.S. bombed this Syrian army convoy near the Syrian border with Iraq, there was a meeting between representatives of the Iraqi and Syrian government where they discussed getting together to jointly fight ISIS together. I wonder if it's a coincidence about the timing.
Oh, I think you're just thinking up conspiracies and all. Well, anyway, I want to thank the audience for joining us today. Obviously, we believe this is a very serious thing going on, this confrontation unnecessarily with Russia today. And it seems to be expanding. And NATO is determined. We are determined. And we believe Russia has to be contained. And yet, all we're doing is precipitating a greater lineup of weaponry and determination. Because, quite frankly, I do not believe, as powerful as they are, I do not believe the West, led by us, and choosing to follow the demands of Saudi Arabia, that all of a sudden we're going to be victorious. They're going to demolish Iran and also win the war and get rid of Assad, and Russia is going to sit still. It's not going to happen. So this gets more dangerous as things go along, and the sooner we get our message out that there is an answer for this is not too difficult. And we could do a lot as a leader in the world, and that is practice what we should be preaching and what our Constitution tells us, and that is to set a standard, have a system of freedom and liberty here at home, and tolerance and free markets and prosperity. Maybe somebody would follow us, but to use the armed might of our government combined with many other governments and say, well, it's a struggle between the Russian concept of what Europe should be about versus what NATO and the United States thinks, this will only get worse. I'm for doing my best to try to send it in the other directions where we can live a little bit more peacefully with the entire world. I want to thank everybody for tuning in today to the Liberty Report. Please come back soon.